Chapter 3, The 1940 Ford. It was now time for Junior to implement his plan for transporting the illegal whiskey from the farm to Bristol. For several months, he had been keeping his eye on the car owned by the widow of Tom Webb, who used to run the small hardware store down at the crossroads. The car was a 1940 Ford Standard Coupe. It was popular with salesmen and small businessmen because, while it only had a front seat, it made up for it with an enormous trunk that extended right up to the middle of the body. This gave it a low polar moment of inertia, even when it was fully loaded. Junior didn't know a polar moment from the North Pole, but he did intuitively understand that a car that had its weight concentrated in the center of the chassis would turn faster and handle better than a car with a lot of overhang. He knew that fast handling of a heavily loaded car was essential for a moonshine car. Overall, it was a small car but was built with a reliable V8 engine that lent itself to modification. Junior had been talking with Jerry Price down at Price's garage. Just as Junior had an extraordinary gift for driving, Jerry had a gift for understanding how to get maximum power out of an engine. He also knew how to modify the suspension of the car so it could handle the increased power. Mr. Webb's Ford Coupe was about to undergo a remarkable transformation. Mr. Roberts paid a call on the Widow Webb the day after they got back from Bristol. He made her a fair offer of $500 on the old Ford, which she gladly accepted as she needed money to move in with her sister in Georgia. He told her that his boy got some work in Bristol and thought her well-kept car would provide him some reliable, economical transportation. That made the devil smile. He gave her cash, and the car was his. Junior went down that afternoon and picked up the car after thanking Mrs. Webb and telling her how proud he was to own it and how he would take good care of it. His first stop was at Jerry's garage, where he made a deal to have the car extensively modified. This was not Jerry's first conversion of an innocent passenger car to make a whiskey runner. He knew what was needed, and he knew how to keep his mouth shut. He also knew to charge a good price. He would order in some special parts and start work first thing next week. The Roberts' plan was a good one in all respects, but there was one annoyance. They cut Jack off too soon. It was essential that they make a delivery in 3 days, and the car could not be ready that soon. There was no alternative other than to use the car exactly as it was purchased from Mrs. Webb. One delivery would hold them until they could get the car fixed. Pa said he would make the delivery, but Junior wouldn't hear of it. It was his job to drive the car, and ready or not, he was going to do it. After all, the risk was very low. What could happen? Mr. Webb was a frugal man when he bought the car new in July of 1940. He bought the cheapest version that was sold by Ford. It had a V8 all right, but it was the puny 60-horsepower engine that looked lost in the engine compartment. It served its purpose of shuttling a load of nuts and bolts between the warehouse and the store, and used a minimal amount of gas in the process. Jerry, as his first task, would be to yank out the 60-horsepower engine and replace it with a bigger Mercury engine. But there it sat for now with the original engine, and it was what Junior was going to have to drive to Bristol. Pa and Junior carefully loaded the 50 quarts of shine in the trunk. They packed it in horse blankets and secured it 6 ways to Sunday with stout ropes. As an extra precaution, they also tied the trunk lid shut. Junior waited until it got dark and then started out on the back road. He did not want to venture out onto the state highway, even though it would have saved a lot of time. He knew the back roads like he knew the scriptures that his ma made him memorize. He felt safe on these deserted roads that were barely 2 lanes wide. They snaked in and out of the hollows past the small farms like the one he and Pa worked. He knew most of the families from the kids with whom he went to school. They all fought the same hard times. But luck was not with Junior tonight. Unknown to him, the revenuers had a tip that Fireball Johnson, a well-known bootlegger, would be coming that way. Fireball was making a run all right, but he had gone down the valley route along the river. 2 agents were waiting in vain in a 1950 Ford sedan on a side road a half mile from the summit. Ambushed. The V8 Ford 60 was a pathetic machine. It struggled mightily under the weight of the shine and the pull of gravity as Junior struggled to get up the ridge. At times he had to go down to 15 miles per hour in first gear to keep the car going. As he neared the summit, he passed the agents drinking their second thermos of coffee while waiting for Fireball to come by. They heard Junior's Ford grinding away as it came up the ridge, its feeble headlights shining in the dark woods. "What the hell was this?" they thought. "What's that old clunker doing out at this time of night? Someone gets sick and need the doctor?" They went back to the warm coffee as Junior passed. "Jess, anything look strange to you about that car?" the agent asked. "Well, now that you mention it, it is riding awful low in the rear. You don't suppose he's hauling shine, do you, Phil? I never saw a runner with that sorry a car, but let's check it out. My ass is tired from sitting here anyway. We can say we've done our job and then go home. What do you say, Jess?"
"I'm with you. Anything beats just sitting here. Besides, that farmer will put out the word that we are around, and that may slow things down for a few days."
They pulled the government-supplied sedan out onto the road and started to accelerate up the hill toward Junior. It was not going to be much of a challenge to catch the old coupe, so they did not use maximum acceleration. Junior was wary, even though he was totally inexperienced. He saw the car on the side road, but tried to ignore it. He didn't want to create any suspicion. Besides, it was probably just a couple of neckers playing stink finger in the back seat. With his sharp vision, he saw the car pull onto the road, lights out. He knew he was in big trouble. It was either the cops or a hijacker. Either way, he was a sitting duck. Junior all but pressed his foot through the floorboard and pounded the steering wheel, trying to coax 1 mile per hour more speed out of his overworked motor. It roared, but wouldn't go one lick faster. His next thought was to jump out and let the car drop into the valley while he ran into the woods. They would never catch him. But then he quickly considered what failure would mean to the family. The parson would kill the deal and go back to Jack. His ma and pa would go back to hard times. He had to make a run out of it. It wasn't like a bad dream in slow motion. It was a bad dream in slow motion. He could sense every foot that the pursuit car was gaining on him. They were one turn below, and he had 300 feet to reach the summit. Just as they rounded the last curve, he crested the summit. Quickly switching off the useless headlights, he started gaining speed as the road changed from uphill to downhill. The revenuers saw the lights go off and suddenly realized they had a live one, even if he was slow. They turned on the lights, shifted down a gear, and slammed the gas pedal to the floor. It was only a matter of seconds, and they would be on his bumper. From that vantage point, they would shoot his tires out. Jess unlimbered his Colt 45 automatic and got ready. Only 16 years old and in big trouble with the law due to total chance. The devil didn't play fair. But that's why he is the devil. In desperation, Junior shifted to second and then to high gear as the coupe rapidly gained speed on the steep downhill grade. He now had the opposite problem to his prior predicament. He had too much speed with insufficient means to control it. The brakes were as pathetic as the engine, and the 650/16 Western Auto tires were the bottom of the automotive barrel. Junior jumped the car from side to side on the road as he squealed around the sharp curves devoid of guardrails. He was within inches and milliseconds of death. He would never get closer. The agents backed off since they were paid to catch bootleggers, not get killed racing down the mountain. They only had to wait for the inevitable wreck and pick up the pieces. Driving by pure instinct, using the slight bit of control he had over the car, Junior whipped the wheel to the left, just at the entrance to Swart Hollow Road. It was little more than a one-lane dirt path scratched out by the county road grader. By some miracle, the Ford bounced wildly in the air, but stayed on the road. Using what little brakes he had left to broadside the car, Junior came to a halt in a shower of dust and rocks. The left front tire exploded in final protest to the abuse it could no longer tolerate. The feds drove on past the cutoff, as they had not seen Junior's violent maneuver. They continued on down the mountain looking for signs of the wreckage that they were sure was there.
Not finding any, they went home, totally puzzled. Junior's legend had started to build at a tender age. With the invincibility of the young, Junior was not even concerned with his near death. His only concern was how he was going to complete the run to Bristol. He pulled the bald spare tire from behind the seat and put it on the coupe. It would just have to hold until he could replace it. He decided to wait until morning before going back on the road. By that time, the car chasing him would have given up. Also, he could blend with the farm traffic. There were a lot of 40 Ford coupes still running around the hills, and they could serve as decoys. About an hour after dawn, he started out again and made it to Bristol without any more trouble. The parson had expected him during the night and was nervous about unloading the trunk during daylight, even though they were parked in the closed carriage house. But then, who would be suspicious of a young lad like Junior driving an old car? Junior bought a replacement tire and headed back home, this time using the state highway, as he had nothing to hide. What was left of the old motor let the coupe plug along at a sluggish rate of speed. Junior didn't even go home, but parked the car in Jerry's garage. He never wanted to drive it again as it was now. Jerry gave him a lift home in the wrecker, where his frantic mother and anxious dad were waiting for him. He lied a little and said he had car trouble on the way and had to wait until morning to get it fixed. Nothing to worry about now that Jerry was going to change it all anyway. Jerry just smiled, and they all went in and had some grits, hog jowl, and gravy. When Ma wasn't looking, Junior slipped Pa a big, fat envelope. The devil had lost the first round.